Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Marty Moscowane. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris appeared for the first time together as running mates yesterday at an event in Wilmington. Biden had announced Tuesday he was choosing Harris to be the Democratic vice presidential candidate.
And this morning, all across the nation, little girls woke up, especially little black and brown girls, who so often feel overlooked and undervalued in their communities. But today, just maybe, they're seeing themselves for the first time in a new way as the stuff of president and vice presidents.
This is a moment of real consequence for America. Everything we care about, our economy, our health, our children, the kind of country we live in, it's all on the line.
Kamala Harris is a historic choice. She's the first woman of color to be chosen for a major party ticket. Born in California, the daughter of Indian and Jamaican immigrant parents, Harris says she grew up going to civil rights protests. She says she pursued a career in law enforcement to fight for change from within. She went from prosecutor to San Francisco district attorney to California attorney general to U.S. senator. She made her name on the national level as a sharp, tough interviewer during high-profile congressional hearings, and she became Biden's rival in the 2020 primary. On this hour of Radio Times, what does the Kamala Harris pick mean for the race for the White House? We have three guests. Mary Frances Berry is the professor of social thought and history at the University of Pennsylvania and the author of many books, most recently, History Teaches Us to Resist: How Progressive Movements Have Succeeded in Challenging Times. She's also the former chairwoman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. Thanks for being here, Mary.
Thank you for having me.
Camille Burge is the professor of political science at Villanova University. She's completing her book, Fired Up, Ready to Go, Pride, Shame, and Anger in Black Politics. Welcome, Camille.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
And Kelly Dittmar, director of research at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University. She's also the author of Navigating Gendered Terrain, Stereotypes and Strategy in Political Campaigns. Are you there, Kelly?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Let's first talk about Harris's selection in terms of history. Mary Frances Berry, you've been a part of and a historian of the civil rights struggle in this country for a long time. What does this selection mean for the country?
Well, it's important in showing how far women and gender in general have come. Biden saying that he would pick a woman, and then he did pick one. We've had a woman vice presidential candidate before, Geraldine Ferraro, with Fritz Mondale.
And Sarah Palin.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, and Sarah Palin also.
Yes, Sarah Palin. I don't want to forget Sarah Palin. Maybe I do. Anyway, the idea is that Ferraro was the first one. And that, so therefore, it's historic in a sense that she's a woman of color. It is not historic in terms of the fact that she is a woman of immigrant background, just as Obama was, and not a person who is a slave-descended African-American. We've yet to have anybody on a ticket. We had some candidates who Biden was looking at. So I think it's historic. I think it's important. It's symbolic in the same way that Obama's selection and election as president was historic. So great idea. Yeah. And great for people who are looking for symbols of change in the country.
Kelly Dittmar, I'm wondering if you can speak to what this means specifically for women who came before her as politicians and women in politics to come.
Yeah, I think, you know, in this moment, and she started her comments yesterday at their joint event by talking about the heroic and ambitious, emphasizing ambitious women that came before her. And I think this is a moment to take stock of those women who I would suggest and argue helped to soften the ground for her achievements and her selection and her nomination. So, you know, we can go back to 1872 when Victoria Woodhull became the first woman to run for president. We can go to 1952 when Charlotta Spears Bass became the first Black woman nominee for vice president on a third party ticket. Shirley Chisholm, of course, in 1972. So you can continue to sort of go through history and look at women who've been willing to challenge the status quo in presidential politics and have done it before the country was ready for it, but certainly pushed us to reimagine what we think about as presidential and who's qualified for these offices. And I think each of those women helped to pave the way so that you get to a Kamala Harris that hopefully, you know, is taken seriously and really recognized as both a viable, electable, if you will, candidate and somebody who could very well be the first woman vice president and the first woman of color to be in one of these presidential offices. So it is giving sort of homage to those women and also celebrating the milestone of this moment.
Camille, I want to bring you into the conversation. I want to read a quote from The New Yorker. Biden's selection of Harris, quote, has lent his campaign a thematic clarity that it didn't have before. In a year of calamities whose effects have been especially painful in Black communities, each of the signal moments of Biden's campaign has concerned the legacy of the civil rights movement. Do you think that that assessment rings true with Democratic voters and especially Black Democratic voters?
Partially. So as a Black woman, as a graduate of a historically Black college, as a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, of which Senator Harris is also a member of, I am ecstatic about this nomination, this selection for vice president. But as a political scientist, going back to the quote you just mentioned, Kevin, I'm not so sure. There's some literature by Evelyn Simeon, who's a political science professor at the University of Connecticut. She wrote a great book out on Oxford University Press about historic firsts and the importance of symbolic empowerment. And so what she writes in this book is that when there is a historic first, whether that be someone who is gendered, racial, a racial candidate, and or both, that this leads to greater political engagement for co-racial, co-gender individuals on the ground. So increased levels of turnout, increased levels of campaign donations, because this historic first candidate generates a great level of pride and enthusiasm. But on the other hand, the other side of this is, you know, what coalitions does this selection mobilize? Also, what coalitions might be demobilized by this selection? So how are Black voters responding to this? Are they willing to overlook the history of Kamala Harris when she was attorney general and prosecuting people of color, especially heavily in California? What does this do for the millennial coalition that the Biden ticket really needed to pick up, the Bernie Sanders supporters that are feeling alienated by the selection of Joe Biden, by Joe Biden's candidacy? What does a Kamala Harris pick do for those individuals, right? Are they more likely to stay at home and say they're not going to vote? Are they going to vote third party? So we have to think in terms of strategy and coalitions. And I'm not sure, as a political scientist, that this was the proper selection in terms of picking up that key missing coalition of millennials, as well as some Black voters who might be feeling the sting of her past political history. But there's a chance that she can right that ship.
Mary Frances Berry, we know that, you know, Black voters, Asian voters, female voters are not monoliths. But what do you think this pick does to Biden's chances at winning the presidency this fall?
Oh, I think Biden, there's no reason why Biden shouldn't win the presidency today, just as there's no reason yesterday why he should not win the presidency. If he can't win the presidency with the economy the way it is, with the virus, with Trump being demonized since 2016 when he got elected, and more and doing more things to demonize him more, if he can't get elected with all of that, then, you know, I won't believe it. But in any case, Kamala Harris's pick will be important, as I said earlier, symbolically. It is absolutely important, and it will be important to those women who wanted Hillary Clinton to be president, and she didn't make it. And I'm talking about white suburban women, white women in general, feminists, people who are concerned about the path that a woman might take and end up as president someday. So this will be somewhat reassuring to them. I do not think that it will affect the black vote more than those black people who believe in symbols and who do not think about policy or what somebody might do. They may not even care that she her prosecution record in California. If they're just interested in symbols, they'll come out. I don't think that's true of young people. My nephew wrote to me a text this morning saying he didn't understand what this was all about, given her record. But so be it. That's what he said. He's a young person. But he's only one. So I don't think we should consider this as a black vote mobilization effort. Biden has the black vote of people who are voters but who don't like Trump. Mm-hmm. And they'll vote just against Trump. But the young voters and the progressives, I think this will not do anything to energize them.
Right. Well, let's talk about that more. Biden could have chosen someone with a much more liberal ideology, somebody in the Bernie Sanders mold. With Harris, he is getting someone with a bit more of a pragmatic take.
Right.
You know, Harris has said, kind of talking about the left wing of the party, quote, policy has to be relevant. That's my guiding principle. Is it relevant? Not is it a beautiful sonnet? Kelly Dittmore, do you want to talk a little bit about how this pick fits in the landscape of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what Camille was noting before, that this particular choice, because of her position in that regard, her not being deemed as, you know, more progressive in line with the Bernie contingent, she is less progressive, arguably, on the surface than somebody like Elizabeth Warren, even, who may have engaged and energized some of those younger voters. She's also somebody, you know, she's given interviews saying, I'm not ideological. Right. And that is pretty contrary to a movement of people who are saying, no, we have to have a pretty strong ideological foundation to our policy agendas. However, that's actually very much kind of how Barack Obama came to power. Right. He sort of said, you know, I'm going to listen to all the best opinions. I'm not going to preordain my response. And that's a similar line that I've heard her use. So on the one hand, I think that does worry folks, and it worries folks who are particularly ideological, and she's going to be pushed by them. But that's also what the rest of this campaign should be about. So I don't think it should be seen as, if today folks are concerned that they can't move closer to backing her. And I think, as was just mentioned by Mary, like there are plenty of people who will say, I'm not enthusiastic about this selection, but I am certainly going to vote for this ticket because of my sense of urgency to remove Donald Trump from office.
Okay, coming up on a break here, we're hearing from Kelly Dittmore, Director of Research at the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University, Camille Burge, Professor of Political Science at Villanova University, and Mary Frances Berry, Professor of Social Thought and History at the University of Pennsylvania, all talking about the Kamala Harris pick. And we do want you to join the conversation. Email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. Or find us on Facebook and Twitter at WHYY Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Marty Moskowain. And in this hour, we're talking about Joe Biden's selection of Kamala Harris to be his running mate. Joining us is Mary Frances Berry, Professor of Social Thought and History at the University of Pennsylvania, Kelly Dittmore, Director of Research at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, and Camille Burge, Professor of Political Science at Villanova University. Camille, you wanted to jump in on that last point there, talking about how Biden could have went with somebody a little bit more liberal, but chose Harris instead.
Right. So I think if Stacey Abrams in Georgia wins the gubernatorial election, there's no question that she's the vice presidential selection for the ticket and that she is in that more progressive wing of the party. But right now, what people, I think, really have to understand is there are serious fractures within the Democratic coalition. And I'm just not sure that the selection of, you know, Senator Harris is going to heal those coalitions. I think it can, but I'm not sure. So when you're talking about the groups within the Democratic coalition, you're talking about African-American voters, members of the Latinx community, LGBTQIA+, suburban white women who are married with college degrees, unwed white women with children, and of course, millennials. And so among all of those groups, you need Obama-era 08 levels of turnout. And if any of those groups, for any reason, decide to stay home or vote third party, the Democratic Party will be tanked. They can lose. And so there are a number of growing conversations about how people are not satisfied with this ticket. And they're considering voting third party. And so for those folks who do identify as Democrats that are making this decision in their head, I think they have to ask themselves three important questions. Number one, are you okay with President Trump selecting the next Supreme Court justice? Notorious RBG is an entire force, but her time on the bench is coming to an end. Number two, down ticket races. So if you stay home because of who's at the top of the ticket, who else might be harmed in terms of local and state elections? And especially because this is a census year and states are going to be redistricting, gerrymandering, depending on which state you're in, with the majority of who's in the state legislature. Are you okay with that? And the third question is, are you okay with another 4 years of President Trump and VP Pence? And if your answer to all three of those questions is 100% yes, because I'm voting my conscience, which is what people are saying, then you vote your third party conscience or stay at home. But if for any reason the answer is anything other than yes, folks are going to have to hold their nose and vote for that Democratic ticket.
Well, let's drill down a little bit.
She left, Kevin, you left something out,
sure,
which is very important. All of that makes sense. But many young people have a bad taste in their mouths left over from the Obama presidency. They appreciate the symbolism of his election as president. And on a personal basis, he's affable and intelligent. And as Biden once said, he's articulate and clean. Biden said that. the point is that they remember that he wouldn't issue the executive order that would have stopped foreclosures on the houses of all those working class black women who lost their houses during the recession. They remember that what he did on police violence was had that task force with Chief Ramsey. Mm-hmm. And as Chief Ramsey himself has said, it didn't come up with anything that made any real difference. And we know that it didn't, because look at the unarmed black people who have been killed since then.
Right.
They know that on the Obamacare, that many people wanted a public option and he wouldn't go for it, that he was cautious, that they like him as a person. I do, too. And the symbolism is correct, but they have voted for symbolism before. And so what I think is the best way to approach what will happen with this ticket is that the older black people who vote, like those in South Carolina and in those other states who are Biden people, will vote, and they will vote for this ticket. Some of the younger people may. I'm talking about black people. And what it really does, I think, again, is to stimulate the women's vote. The white women's vote that cares about this, the suburban vote, the progressive vote on the white side that sees this as a great ticket and getting rid of Trump. But getting rid of Trump is just not enough. Otherwise, we wouldn't have all these protests that are going on now and are still going on.
Well, let's talk about this pick from Biden's point of view for a moment. When I think back to the Democratic debates that were happening last summer, the clashes that I remember most are between Biden and Harris. I want to play a clip. This was Harris confronting Biden on the debate stage in July 2019, criticizing him for his views on school desegregation busing in the 1970s.
Vice President Biden, do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America then?
No.
Do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education That's what I opposed.
Well,
I
there
did
was
not
a failure of states to integrate public schools in America. I was part of the second class to integrate Berkeley, California public schools almost two decades after Brown v. Board of Education.
Because your city council made that decision. It was a
local
decision.
So that's where the federal government must step in. That's why we have the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. That's why we need to pass the Equality Act.
Joe Biden's wife, Jill, called that exchange a punch in the gut for Joe Biden. Given this, what does it say about Biden to select Harris and also for Harris to accept? I'll put that to you, Kelly Dittmar.
I think that this is politics. It's always frustrating after a primary when candidates are supposed to be pushing each other on issues and challenging each other and making the case for why they're best. Of course, they're going to call out their opponents on things that they disagree with. And in fact, we should want that in a running mate to a presidential candidate. So you saw yesterday Joe Biden emphasizing that what he wanted and what Kamala Harris wanted was to be the last person in the room when a decision was made and to really push him and to think differently and question perhaps some of his judgments so that it could his decisions could be better. And I think that example in some ways is showing that she's certainly willing and ready to do that. And they're not going to agree on everything. And that is a value added to the ticket. So I think it's a bit of a straw man to say they've disagreed before and therefore it's going to be difficult. That should actually be seen as a value. If you remember, Barack Obama during the 2008 campaign said that Joe Biden wasn't qualified to be president. So he made comments like that as well. And they had to reconcile and figure out the ways in which they could draw on each other's strengths to be a team. And I think we'll just see that again. So I think they can move on. They clearly have a strong personal relationship and ties, especially through Beau Biden. And we'll continue to see that over the course of the campaign.
If I may, sure. I would like to add that exchange tells us something else about Joe Biden.
Sure.
Because I happen to have been running federal education programs at the time when the busing issue was hot in Delaware and in Wilmington. And it was Joe Biden. When I got there, I found out that the money that we were supposed to give to cities to help them with their desegregation, Joe Biden and Tom Eagleton had added a rider to the federal appropriations bill saying that no money could be used for busing school children in order to achieve desegregation. He did that. He did it for political reasons because it was a hot political issue in Delaware.
This was in the 1970s,
but it
right?
It is dissembling for him to state, and politicians do that. That's what politicians do. Kamala Harris is a politician. Her whole political career, if you follow her, and there's nothing wrong with being a politician, is that she makes the choice that she thinks will politically get her where she wants to go. And if it doesn't, then she retreats and she goes in the other direction. That makes a good politician. That doesn't mean that we out here who are voters shouldn't put pressure on them. We should continue to have them make good decisions. And we also should not ignore things that politicians do that are dissembling if we like the politician and then pile on when it's somebody we don't like. We should be equal opportunity piler ons.
Camille, can I bring you into the conversation here?
Absolutely. And so I agree with both of what Kelly and Mary Frances have said. I apologize. My connection was lost towards the end of the earlier comments, but during the primaries, you know, the goal is to make yourself stand out and to explain to your base voters why you are the best selection. And so for me, the fact that, you know, they disagreed or that she held him, you know, to the fire about his past political history and why it might be problematic, that's what you would expect going off of Kelly's comments. But I think they can use those differences and the places where Joe Biden might be weak, Senator Harris might be strong, and vice versa, use those differences to come up with innovative policies that might appeal, again, to their very diverse coalition to bring them out to the polls in November.
In recent months, Harris has spoken forcefully about police brutality, racism, has introduced police reform bills following the killing of George Floyd. And it's clear that her views have shifted. in the past decade, from when the time when she was a district attorney, when the time when she was an attorney general. I'm going to read two quotes, and I think this taps into a little bit of what you were talking about there, Mary, in terms of her being a politician. Here's from her 2009 book, Smart on Crime. Quote, "If we take a show of hands, those who would like to see more police officers on the street, mine would shoot up. Virtually all law-abiding citizens feel safer when they see officers walking a beat." Here's a quote from this summer. "It's status quo thinking to believe that putting more police on the streets creates more safety. That's wrong.
Right.
It's just wrong."
Right.
Talk about that,
Absolutely.
Mary.
Absolutely. What Kamala Harris has done throughout her career, and she and I followed her since she first got into politics in California, she is an expert politician with the political. As I say, she will make statements and she'll retreat if she has to and then go in a different direction. She is only acknowledging what is going on in the society. Now we have a Black Lives Matter movement. Now police issues, we know from Hillary's experience with the super predators thing in the last campaign, is a very salient issue. And with the continued shooting and killing of unarmed Black people, it will continue to be an issue. So she wanted to be shift to be at the forefront of this. I think that a Biden-Harris presidency will more likely do what the middle does, go back to the point of people wanting to be safe on the streets. We've seen that in some debates in the New York City Council recently that were reported in the news about whether to defund part of the police. And so what you have seen with her is a canny, she's very canny, and I admire that, shift in direction. The successful politicians do that, and that is what she's done. It has nothing to do with how she feels personally. It has to do with what we think the politics will reward at the moment.
There could be room for personal evolution on issues, surely.
Yeah, but I mean, don't, if you're a good politician, you do not take your guide publicly from what your inner core tells you and then blurt it out. What you do is you nuance, you give nuanced statements about things, and she's smart enough to do that.
Camille, your take on that?
I agree wholeheartedly with what she's saying. I think to get ahead of, well, they can't get ahead of the storm. It's already here. I mean, there's some really crafty hashtags about the nation being under arrest on Twitter with this ticket. And so both Senator Harris and Joe Biden have very problematic histories on mass incarceration. So Joe Biden is the sole author of that 90s crime bill that comes out. He wanted it to be called the Biden bill when it actually came out. And again, with what we know in terms of her history as AG. And so they can't get ahead of that. They can't run away from it. And like Mary was saying, they can pivot and say that they've changed on these opinions. But more than words, they can come out within the next 2 weeks with a policy initiative, something that's actually policy oriented to address mass incarceration issues. They can own both of their roles in the cradle to prison pipeline, and they can produce a policy initiative to address it directly. And so going off of the comment that Mary made, it has to be more than words. It has to be more than words. It has to be, here is the actual policy action. Here is our solution that we're proposing to you. And if you're on board with this solution, please come out to the polls and vote for us.
I want to take an email here quickly. I'm going to take an email here from Beverly. She writes in, "Your guest is repeating what has become a, quote, popular view that Kamala Harris was not progressive as DA in California. She should take note of what Nikki Salas, a 24-year public defender who worked against Kamala Harris, has written. Quote, I worked with Kamala Harris. She was the most progressive DA in California." So there's clearly a debate here about Kamala's record, and you know, maybe she was progressive in 2006 compared to where other DAs were in 2006.
It depends on how many progressive prosecutors you had in California, doesn't it?
Right.
And when
well,
she made
I also
the statement.
Think if I could...
Yeah, Kelly, jump in here.
Yeah, I mean, I think this actually speaks to a bigger debate we're having in this moment, and around Kamala Harris, which is there are plenty of folks who would say, regardless of what her individual record was, that she was a creature of an institution that is systematically racist, right? And that by correct. Simply sort of being at the top of that institution in California, she is the quote unquote top cop. And I think that's partly what we're grappling with, too. And it's really important to go back and look at her specific history, because I think there is more nuance to the debate about what exactly she did, how it may have pushed California further in a progressive direction, and those things mm-hmm. that she did that did not, and where she failed in the views of many progressives. But sometimes we lose the nuance even of her own history by saying, well, she bought into the institution and therefore she's problematic in and of herself. The other piece that I think we have to think about is how, if she wanted to be one of the only, I mean, there's only been 4 Black women attorneys general, in the country. That means that there are also distinct pressures that are placed on her to both mm-hmm. try to navigate and fit an institution while also trying to disrupt it. And it's not to apologize for the things she failed to do, but I do think right. we have to take that into consideration in our evaluation of her history. She was making history every step of the way, and you know yeah. that she was pushed back against every step of the way with a presumption that she was too progressive or that she was going to be too radical, as we're already seeing in this race.
Let me read another email. Right. This one's coming in from Ronald. He writes, as a lifelong white male Democrat in my 60s, I'm ecstatic about the choice of Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. I believe that as a centrist, she will appeal to independent and never Trump Republican voters. Camille, you want to talk mm-hmm. about that?
Again, my point is not to, you know, demonize Senator Harris or say that she, you know, wasn't progressive enough. I mean, the Open Justice Initiative that she had in California was one of a kind.
And I should say, we're coming up on a break.
Break here.
So about 20 seconds, if you can, Camille.
Yeah. But it is to say that they have a chance to appeal to people through their platform. And so what are they going to do to appeal to their very diverse coalition, to bring them all together, folks especially that are on the progressive wings?
Okay. Camille Burge is the professor of political science at Villanova University. Kelly Dittmar, director of research at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers. Mary Frances Berry, professor of social thought and history at the University of Pennsylvania. Join the conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org or Facebook and Twitter at WHYY Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Marty Moskowine. This hour, we're talking about Joe Biden's selection of Kamala Harris to be his running mate. Joining us is Camille Burge, professor of political science at Villanova University, Kelly Dittmar, director of research at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers, and Mary Frances Berry, professor of social thought and history at the University of Pennsylvania. Let's talk for a minute about the spotlight that Harris is now in. As a woman in a heated presidential race, she's sure to endure misogyny, double standards, and that's going to be amplified by the fact that she's a woman of color. What sort of toxicity can we expect in the coming days and weeks? Camille, I'll put that to you.
Oh my gosh, and Kelly knows all about this because of the research that comes out of the center that she directs, but obviously you can expect race-coded language. She's well-spoken. She's articulate. You can expect to see references to her attire, even references to family, motherhood, that you would probably otherwise not see for male candidates. We know that the media, one of my co-authors and I, Melissa Hodges, who's in the sociology department at Villanova, we wrote a paper about how the media portrays presidential hopefuls, vice presidential hopefuls as well, in both racialized and gendered ways. And the language that you see is just appalling. So we should be on the lookout for those kinds of of keywords, for references to appearances, for references to skin color, hair type, being well-groomed, right? Those kinds of words and phrases that are very clear dog whistles for people of color as well as women, and both at the intersections, who have heard these things time and time again. And we've already seen some headlines across major newspapers containing this kinds of language.
Kelly Dittmar, do want to bring you in on this too.
Yeah, no, I mean, Camille and the research that she's done is spot on, right? This is the stuff we have to watch for. And I do think, by the way, there is a contingent already really ready to sound the alarm this cycle more than we've seen in the past. And so that's a positive development, that when this stuff happens, there are folks ready to call it out explicitly, including Senator Harris, by the way, by leading with this comment about ambitious women. She was calling out the already critiques that she faced for being too ambitious, which of course lands differently when you're talking about a woman, when you're talking more specifically about a Black woman than it does if you said the same thing about John Edwards or Joe Biden. And that's because of these deeply rooted, you know, stereotypical expectations about how women should behave. I also think there are two other things to watch for specifically with Kamala Harris and the coverage and commentary. One is this painting her as radical. So this is time and again what we see in targeting of women of color and Black women specifically, right? Radical, extremist, dangerous, and threatening. The first ad that the Trump folks put out was an image of Kamala Harris alongside AOC and Ilhan Omar, two other women of color that have been used as symbols of threatening extremism in politics that is hardly veiled in terms of sex and race. And then also questions about, again, we're back to birther and questions about her race as having a multiracial background. And I think that's another layer of scrutiny that unfortunately we're going to see on Kamala Harris.
We've already seen negative remarks coming, as you've mentioned. President Trump attacked her as being, quote, extraordinarily nasty. He called her a phony for attacking Biden in the clip we heard earlier and then turning to support him. Trump also said she treated then Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, quote, horribly during his confirmation hearing. I want to play another clip of Harris questioning Kavanaugh during that hearing. This was September 2018. As a senator, she was asking him if Kavanaugh was willing to have the FBI investigate the sexual assault allegations that were being made against him.
Are you willing to ask the White House to conduct such an investigation? Because as you are aware, the FBI did conduct a background investigation into you before we were aware of these most recent allegations. So are you willing to ask the White House to do that and say yes or no, and then we can move on?
I've had six background investigations over 26 years.
Sir, as it relates to the recent allegations, are you willing to have them do it?
The witness testimony is before you. No witness who was there supports that I was there.
Okay, I'm going to take that as a no and we can move on.
What do we hear in Kamala Harris in that exchange there, Mary Frances Berry?
It is basically a prosecutor asking questions, which is she did it, and she's very good at it, and that's what you heard. And she will be very good at that. Everybody thought he was going to put her on the Supreme Court or something and make her the Attorney General. She's a good lawyer, and she's a prosecutor, and that's what she was doing. That's what you're supposed to do. I didn't see anything that was insulting in it at all.
Camille,
can I weigh in here?
Oh, sure. Is that Kelly? Yes, yeah.
Sorry. I mean, I think this is so that exchange, as well as her exchange with Jeff Sessions, if you recall how frazzled he got in her questioning, is such an explicit to me a view of sort of white male fragility when confronted with a woman and specifically a Black woman in power. I mean, they had no idea. They're destabilized when they're presented with something that is so, for them, counter to what is expected. And that's actually her strength. That is a superpower of Senator Harris, because she's got the skills, she's got the intelligence. And when these men are confronted with it, they don't know how to respond. And so you see President Trump say, well, she's just nasty. She's nasty because she's challenging the power and the privilege that you've benefited from for so long. I mean, it's quite textbook, and the illustration of it in that moment, I think, is telling. And that's why it was interesting that Trump kind of brought up that clip right away, because on, I think, the more progressive side, especially among women, there's a rallying around in that moment and saying, like, thank you for demonstrating your power in this moment.
I think maybe from Trump's point of view, he's thinking, well, maybe there's folks out there who, you know, don't like me particularly or my style, but they really do like the conservative judges that I've put on the court.
Hello.
And let me remind you.
Okay, if you keep muting me, I'm just going to hang up. Because I have something else to say.
Oh, I didn't hear you there, Mary. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it,
I wanted to, but if you wish to mute me, I'll just not get off the line.
Sorry.
That's what you keep doing.
It's hard to see what's happening here remotely. We're all remote.
Well, let me just, in the interest of time, let me just say what I have to say.
Sure.
I think that all of these discussion about her being called names or talking about her gender or talking about that are sideshows, and that, in fact, they're going to dissipate. Because the last email that you read from the guy who said he was a Republican and he thought that she would appeal to certain people, Kamala Harris has the look, the style, she has the experience, and she's an expert politician. And she looks more like somebody who could be vice president to people who are in that group than somebody like Stacey Abrams, for example. And the other black women who were involved. And so she looks the part. She has the intelligence. She's a good politician. And I think all this stuff about her being nasty and this and that and the other, throwing it up against the wall and seeing what will stick, will dissipate. And the issues will be about policy.
Certainly not trying to mute you at all, Mary, just trying to balance the audio levels here as we're having this conversation remotely. I was making a point about, you know, Trump kind of tapping into this idea that there's certain conservative voters who really like Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, who might not, you know, agree with Trump as a personality. Camille, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked at the fact that he chose the Brett Kavanaugh clip because, I mean, that was not a great day. that hearing was not great. It wasn't a shining moment for Republicans or conservatives. And so when you hear that clip and you hear such concise questioning with facts and thinking about how people responded to it, going back to Kelly's comment about fragility and talking about her being nasty or shrill. Like, these are the exact gendered comments folks are talking about. And if I'm a Republican, I'm not sure I want to remind folks of Brett Kavanaugh's hearing, because this is part of Me Too. And so what does bringing that back into the political space, what does that do, especially for white women voters? Who might have, they haven't forgotten about Brett Kavanaugh now, but like who might have forgotten about that hearing and how horribly wrong it went. What does this do to stoke various emotions and bring that conversation back into the fore? It's not a choice I would make.
I want to note too that,
Oh,
sorry, Mary, did you have another point there?
The only point I would make is that Kamala Harris is likely to not make missteps in this campaign. And if she does make them, she'll clean them up. She's likely not to. She's a very effective politician. And she will carry through. The establishment Democrats who promoted her candidacy from the beginning, I know because they were all calling me and emailing me to get me to go tell this person, that person, the other person, to make sure she was the person, that, in fact, they're so pleased because they see her as the future of the party, that they want her to keep herself clean and effective and as non-controversial as possible so that she can be the first woman president and run then. And I don't think she'll make missteps, and I think she'll take it easy, and I think she'll do fine.
I do want to note that yesterday at the appearance that Biden had with Harris for the first time as running mates, he noted that The day that he made the announcement was the best grassroots fundraising day of his campaign, mm-hmm. more than double his previous record. They said they set a single day record for online political fundraising. So we've been talking a lot about how this is going to play with voters. It seems like it's playing very well with people who contribute to campaigns. And we should note that Harris is from California, which has been this Democratic Party fundraising cash cow. So is that part of the calculus here, that you know, Biden's campaign gets a fundraising shot in the arm?
And so I think the 4 hours after her announcement, when they raised, I think, $10.8 million, is that the Act Blue that you're talking about,
mm-hmm,
Kevin?
Mm-hmm.
There is enthusiasm there. Like, I don't want to leave this conversation like with the dark cloud and that wasn't a great selection. There's a great deal of enthusiasm surrounding this selection. But my hope for the Democratic Party is that they come up with a platform and policy initiatives, meta language, to appeal to their very diverse coalition to give people a reason to turn out in November. Because just being anti-Donald Trump or saying I'm not Donald Trump and Mike Pence may not be enough. People think that it is. Mm-hmm. But folks really want to see, especially progressives, they really want to see what these two candidates are going to do for the Democratic Party and for individuals.
Kelly, did you want to jump in there?
I think one other thing that we just haven't even touched today is that it's not only getting people enthusiastic about voting for this ticket. And I think that's right. We have to, the Democratic Party is going to have to figure this out. It's also making sure that people can vote. The voter suppression and the very intentional effort of this administration and folks in states to disrupt the mail-in voting, to make sure that certain groups of people aren't able to vote or confused about voting, that's what we've seen over time. It's going to be only heightened this year. And so that's another piece of the Democratic Party effort that has to, you know, has to happen to be sure that folks who want to come out, and folks can come out and vote.
Mary Frances Berry, you were talking about, you know, the Democratic Party seeing Harris as its future. What do you think her influence would be in a Biden White House were he to win? What effect would she have on domestic or foreign policy?
Well, I think that Kamala Harris would have about as much effect as Biden did with Obama, and that, as most vice presidents have, sometimes they have a lot and sometimes they don't have any at all. I think that Biden would be necessarily nice to her and not want her to complain behind the scenes to people that she was left out. And I think he would include her in things. There's no reason not to. And he has told people in the same establishment Democratic Party that he sees the person that he picks as vice president nominee as being the future and as being groomed for that. So I think that she would have she would be included. She would be able to be in the meetings, to know what's going on and all the rest. Whether or not she can influence him to make a decision one way or the other, that's a different story.
About a minute left here in the show. I want to give you each chance, a small chance to chime in with any last thoughts that you have. We can start with you, Camille.
It's the Democratic Party's to lose. That is my major point. They need to figure out the meta language, take a note from Stacey Abrams and John Ossoff, Lucy McBath, from their campaigns where they're using economic meta language, healthcare, to appeal to their very diverse coalition, mass incarceration, policy initiatives. They can win, but they have a lot of work to do. It's not going to be as easy as people are making it seem.
Kelly Dittmar.
And I would just put this into context of, we should be celebrating and pay attention to the top of the ticket, but also down ballot, the many, many important races across the country. And at the center, what we've been celebrating and putting out, record numbers of women running, record numbers of women of color running in each racial and ethnic group, Black women, Latinx women, Asian women, and Native American women running this cycle. And so, you know, if you're looking to support candidates, look up and down the ballot for how you might get involved.
And just a few seconds, if you have, Mary Frances Berry, to make a quick, very quick point.
it is theirs to lose. And remember 216 and the polls then. So be confident, but don't be overconfident.
Well, thank you. That's Mary Frances Berry, professor of social thought and history at the University of Pennsylvania. Kelly Dittmar, director of research for the Center of American Women in Politics at Rutgers. Camille Burge is professor of political science at Villanova University. Our engineer today was Diana Martinez. Radio Times is produced by John Ahrens, Debbie Bilder, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moskowitz. Thanks for joining us.